Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
This is The Writer's Voice, new fiction from The New Yorker. I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor at The New Yorker. On this episode of The Writer's Voice, we'll hear David Gates read his story, Texas, from the January 15th, 2018 issue of the magazine. Gates is the author of four books of fiction, including the novel Preston Falls and the story collection A Hand Reached Down to Guide Me, which was published in 2015. Now here's David Gates.
Texas. After the children had left home and his wife had made her escape to Italy, Garver kept most of the house closed off, even when summer came and he no longer had to save on heat. Better the blank doors than the empty rooms, not to get sentimental at this late date. He still went to his studio every day, although the work was no good anymore, and anymore was putting it kindly. His married daughter, Emma, the only one of the kids who kept in touch, had flown up for his birthday and told him that this was no way to live. Look at the garden, sumacs 10 feet high. He should sell this stupid farm and move back down to the city, she said, or someplace where he could see people. 63 wasn't too old to make a fresh start.
Ah, but is every morning not a fresh start, Garver said.
You need a better attitude, she said. His children might not have turned out to be prodigies, but by Jesus, he'd given them an ear for irony. Anyway, he did see people. He'd even had a thing with one of the artsy transplants, a printmaker whom he'd met at her opening in a converted barn, after his wife had left, be it noted. She'd confessed to her husband, thank God, before it had become necessary to say something about her work. Electric green pastures with black and white cows. The scandal had cost him invitations to lawn parties and potlucks. Republicans couldn't have been more self-righteous. But now and then, he still smoked weed with another graybeard who had once worked for Gary Hart and had hooked Garver up with the local growers. And during baseball season, he'd drop by the sports bar where he could batter with the salt of the earthers. Garver had grown up in western Pennsylvania, so he knew how to talk that talk. No, the problem was money. The once-a-week drive down to Pratt had raised hell with his back. He couldn't collect full Social Security for 3 more years, and he was afraid to show his dealer, if she was still his dealer, his recent pieces, found objects on painted canvases. Rauschenberg had done the same shit better 60 years ago. Garver had done the same shit better 20 years ago. So he'd just finish a new one and stack it against the wall with the others. Maybe they'd be taken for intentional kitsch someday. He'd be the Jeff Koons of 2099. But he liked smelling the good old oil paint and turpentine. No acrylics for this boy. And sometimes he'd still make a mark that satisfied him. And he worked while listening to late Miles Davis, which sounded like Miro, and which used to be his lucky music. Fuck Rauschenberg. What he wanted, really, was to paint like Miro. That was the difference between him and Miro. Garver had built the studio himself when the kids were little, a few hundred yards past the house on what must have been an old logging road. Toilet, sink, shower stall, single bed. Like a cabin at the church camp he'd gone to when he was 12. All he'd ever needed. When things started falling to shit with his wife, he'd bought a mini-fridge and stapled up insulation. So why not move in here and rent out the big house, maybe to some writer type from the city? If he could get, say, $1,500, that would cover the mortgage, which still had years to run, and enough over to live on. A young couple answered his ad in the New York Review of Books, and when they got out of their rental car on the Saturday afternoon before the 4th of July, him in jeans and black t-shirt with shaved head, her in yellow sundress, dark bangs, those retro cat's eye glasses, he thought, "You'll do." She released their little girl from her car seat and lifted her out. The girl's pudgy legs dangled, then kicked. Ben was a composer with a grant from the NEA, and Lois had an MFA in nonfiction from Columbia. The little girl had just turned 5. They praised the trees and the quiet. No news to Garver. Before getting on to the school thing, private schools, they believed, were elitist. So, good lefties though they were, they'd chosen to put their daughter among redneck kids instead of black kids. Or that was how Garver read it. He and his wife had had the same coded discussion years ago. His two older children had managed to get into SUNY Plattsburgh, and William had actually graduated in what was called marketing. Emma had got pregnant during her sophomore year and was now a stay-at-home mother in Denton, Texas. The youngest, Marianne, had finally straightened out enough to hold a job at an animal shelter near Burlington. Garver had his own dish put up for the internet. It was about time anyway. And at the end of July, Ben and Lois moved their stuff up from their one bedroom in Bushwick. Everything they owned fitted into a U-Haul van. Garver didn't even have to put his furniture in the barn. The little girl got Marianne's old room, whose flowered wallpaper had cleaned up okay with a sponge. Lois made William's room her study, and Ben set up his keyboard and computers in Emma's room, which had a view of the hills to the east in Vermont. Garver hung a mosquito net over the double bed in the master bedroom for them. The bugs wouldn't leave Lois alone, and Ben didn't seem handy enough for country life. They'd bought a used Honda, and when the battery died, he didn't know what jumper cables were. Ben worked every day on what he said was a quintet for strings and sampler commissioned by the Aspen Music Festival, while Lois took the little girl to the lake. When school started, she said, she'd get back to revising her thesis on the films of Ida Lupino. Ben had hunted down Garver's old website, and some evenings after dinner he'd walk over to the studio to look at what he called the pictures. Garver approved of the word, though he couldn't tell if Ben was clear-sighted or inarticulate. They'd listen to jazz, drink Garver's Knob Creek, and have some man talk in the guise of artist talk. It wasn't until the evening of Labor Day that Garver learned the other reason for the family's little pastoral. Lois had thought that a change of scene and getting away from certain friends might help Ben cut back on smoking weed. Not totally, he told Garver, just, you know, not go crazy with it. I hear that, Garver said. Shit's strong these days. Lately, he'd taken to having just one hit, then drinking whiskey to dull his paranoia. You wouldn't have any, would you? Ben said. I mean, I know that's a weird thing to ask, you know, your landlord. I might, Garver said. Actually, I might join you in just a smidge. The next morning, Garver walked down to the mailbox and found a postcard addressed to Lois and Ben, a green hillside topped by a castle sloping down to the Rhine. Lois was hanging a sheet on the line he'd strung up for her, from a hook on one of the porch posts to a hook screwed into the maple tree. "Guten Tag," he called. "You're up bright and early." "First day of school," and I thought I'd do laundry before Ben settled into work. Hearing the washer makes him crazy. You'll make some man a good wife, he said. Here, this came. Oh, cool. My sister and her partner are in Germany for a month. We're hoping to get there next summer. Ben wants to go to Bayreuth. Wagner Central, right? They still tattoo your seat number on your wrist? You're being evil, she sang. He's thinking about an opera eventually. Ah, to be young and ambitious. I help you with those? He bent down to the laundry basket, saw a pair of her black lace underpants, and took a pillowcase. God, first day of school. They grow up fast. This was the way to talk. Poor Claire, she had a meltdown about her new sneakers. We went over to those outlet places. She pointed her chin in what she seemed to think was the direction of Manchester. And now she's having buyer's remorse. Sorry, this isn't interesting to you. I hope you're not, he said, having renter's remorse. He hung up a t-shirt with the David Levine caricature of Stravinsky. Well, it's been a godsend for Ben, so far. She hung up a pair of little leggings. Can I talk to you about something? You want a cup of coffee? Will we bother him? No, voices are okay. It's just like anything rhythmic. He followed her up the porch steps, watching her bare heels lift up off her flip-flops. Go ahead and sit, she said. You take milk? But no sugar, thanks. Didn't get service like this under the old management. She poured his coffee and sat down across from him at the kitchen table. Here's the thing, okay? It's not like I want to be Ben's mommy, but when he came back from your place last night, he couldn't even put a sentence together. Really? He seemed okay. I'm not stupid, she said. Look, he can do whatever. Obviously, it's just... I'm afraid I was the culprit, Garber said. If you'd rather... I don't know. I mean, I'm not a Puritan or anything. It's just when it gets out of hand, which it has sometimes. I don't want to see him go there again. He's been working really well. Got it, he said. Listen, it's probably not the best thing for me either. Some people, I guess it's fine, she said. You know, Ben looks up to you. His father was kind of a monster. He looks up to me, then he is in deep shit. No, seriously, I'm glad he said something. He took a sip of coffee. Too hot. So how's your work coming? I was going to get started this morning. Then I should get out of your hair. He got up from the table. Can I take this? I'll bring your cup back. It's yours, actually. Huh, come to think of it, he said. So are we good? We don't have to talk about this anymore, she said. Ben stopped visiting the studio, but in early October, he and Lois invited Garver to dinner to celebrate Ben's finishing his piece. The leaves were blazing and falling as he walked to the house. They'd already filled the ruts his truck had made. He presented Lois with a bottle of Mumm's, and Ben pointed to a bottle of Knob Creek on the blanket chest they'd moved down from the bedroom to use as a coffee table. While they cooked, he sat with their little girl, who was watching a Disney movie. The princess in this one had a bow and arrow and didn't want to get married. Lois came in and sat between them on the sofa. Sorry about... She pointed a thumb at the screen. She's got a new bestie who's all into this. I guess it's, you know, modeling not such bad stuff. I'm just afraid she's going native. I don't think we're supposed to say that anymore, Ben said. Looks like you could use a refill. God, the more things change, Garver said. My youngest wore out the tape of The Little Mermaid. We used to take Claire to the young people's concerts, Lois said. Yeah, Ben poured more whiskey over Garver's eyes. Spared that, at least. He's such a snob, Lois said. I swear, though, half the kids in her class are earning lay disabled day. What's that? The little girl said. Just boys, sweetie, her mother said. She turned to Garver. Did you have trouble navigating this? I mean, you were like us. What can I tell you, Garver said. There's advantages and disadvantages. Well, shit, that was fucking profound. I'm trying to watch this, the little girl said. Claire, her mother said. No, she's right, Garver said. I was being loud. Not to mention, Ben said. We should eat, Lois said. I'll bring you a plate, sweetie. At the dining room table, Garver raised his glass of champagne. Hey, official congratulations. So when's the blessed event? Garver thought he saw Lois give Ben the stink eye. Ben cocked his head. Oh, he said, right. They're looking at July. I'm flying out next week to talk about stuff. That's great, Garver said. Shit, I haven't been on a plane since they started making you take your shoes off. Another age of the world. What was he doing in this room with these young people? His wife used to sit in that chair. He used to sit where this young man was. And there'd been the aesthetic problem of two kids on one side and one on the other. A couple of years ago, Garver had found an old household dump out in the woods. He'd unearthed a plastic bas-relief Porky Pig face, the rollers of a washing machine, the carcass of a Bakelite radio, and a doll's head with evenly spaced hair holes, and brought them to his studio thinking, maybe someday. It had taken all this time for him to realize that he was sick of looking at them. Well, if you hate them, why not use them? Like that insidious hymn from his childhood. If you love him, why not serve him? As the sun was setting, he gave up and started the wood stove for what would be the first of many times before May, and finally took off his red plaid jacket. The denim shirt would be enough. He was listening to the Jack Johnson sessions on his laptop and sketching out possible arrangements on Bristol board. It would be a big canvas and a bitch to transport, not that he'd ever be called upon to transport it, when Ben called his cell. You receiving? Or are you still working? Nah, I'm about done. Jesus, there's a confession. Cool. I thought I'd stop by for a second. I'm flying out in the morning. We used to sing that one too, Garver said. Yeah, just give me a minute to put shit away. He turned off the music, put his sketches on his work table face down, then pawed through the canvases stacked against the wall. He pulled half a dozen that bothered him less than the others. He hoped he hadn't already trotted them out, and lined them up facing the room. Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before the king? Ben came in wearing a black wool topcoat and a knit cap on his shaved head. Man, it's chilly, he said. I just checked the weather. Supposed to be a frost tonight. I have to get up at 5 so Lois can drive into the airport. Got a scraper for your windshield, Garver said. Better grab mine out of the truck. You picked a good time to get out of Dodge. Yeah, but to Colorado? Ben took off his coat and sat in the Morris chair next to the stove. These new? I like that one on the left. Newish. Newish-ish. Garver took down the bottle of Knob Creek and two jelly glasses. You want a taste? Hit me, Ben said. So how cold does it get up here? Whoa, when? Well, last winter wasn't the worst. Garver took the desk chair, supposedly ergonomic, and set his glass on the table between them. He'd nailed it together out of boards from the barn. You're probably going to want snow tires. Okay, I'm not going to think about it, Ben said. Cheers. First today, Garver said. Yeah, that burns. Congratulations again, by the way. I'd like to hear that piece sometime. Actually, Ben reached into his coat pocket and handed Garver a thumb drive. This is still rough, and it's not real strings. Shit, thanks. Garver got up and went to his laptop. Just plug this in, right? Oh, no. I didn't mean for you to keep it for some time when you're... Maybe when you're working or something. I think it's... I don't know. I'm not going to say. He took a sip and nodded at the canvases. That one on the left with the red business, that just moves, like internally. I don't really know how to talk about pictures. Hey, I don't know how to talk about music. Garver put the thumb drive in his shirt pocket and snapped the snap. Ben put his glass down. Listen, what I could really use... Great minds, Garver said. Your lady would kill me, though. Oh, she gave you the talk? She was nice about it. She would be. So I guess I'm cut off. Paging Dr. Freud, Garver said. Ah, shit. I don't want to be the devil, but one hit probably wouldn't hurt you. Yeah, I don't know, Ben said. Pot's a weird thing. Everything's a weird thing, Garver said, properly looked at. He opened the mini-fridge and took out the ball jar, set it on the table, packed the wooden pipe, and turned the stem to Ben. With an old man's blessings. Ben took a hit, coughed it out, took another, and passed the pipe to Garver, then closed his eyes and released the smoke. Oh, fuck yeah. Just gets so noisy by the end of the day. Garver sat back down in the desk chair. When he saw Ben's eyes open again, he relit the pipe and took a hit himself. Yeah, better keep it to one. He set the pipe down, and Ben picked it up. Garver let out the smoke and said, a word to the wise. It's cool. Ben held this one in for what seemed to Garver like a long time, then took one more and passed the pipe across the table. Garver held up a hand. Taking a wait-and-see position, Ben said. Fuck that, no offense. You mind if I... Boys will be boys, Garver said. Hell, I might as well do one more, too. Music? Yeah, but not... You wouldn't have, like, Ellington or whatever. Just not anything too squonky. I mean, I don't mean to dictate. Garver took a second hit, went to his laptop, and scrolled through iTunes. That first hit was coming on already, so it was Katie Bar the Door. I got just the thing, he said, and clicked on the payback. Somehow it had got dark outside. Is this Ellington? Ben said. No, 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 Garver said. James Brown. Right, 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 Ben said. He is Ellington. No, actually, he's fucking Terry Riley. I fucking love this piece. He started bobbing his head in time with it, then stopped. You know, he said, I'm the real deal. He wasn't making much of a case for himself. The song seemed to be going on for a long time. After a while, Garver looked at the track listing. 7 minutes and 39 seconds. Whew. So that explained it. Ben had another hit. Garver drained his whiskey and poured himself more. He was afraid that Ben could read his thoughts. But was there really anything wrong in his thoughts? Well, that. More of this, Garver said, when the song finally stopped. More of everything, Ben said. You know, that picture? What I was thinking, the red thing, if it was farther up, into the center more? Am I being too pushy? I am. No, no, something's wrong with it. Yeah, okay, so you're humoring me. Sorry. Fuck, I'm the only person in the world who gets belligerent on fucking pot. I think I need to take a walk. He stood up, then sat back down. I'm fucked. Not to add to your troubles, Garver said, but is Lois going to be wondering where you are? Yeah, shit, I better go. He got to his feet again, put out a hand to steady himself against the wood stove, and jerked it back just in time. I can keep this together. Experiences to the contrary. Wait, what did I say? Appearances to the contrary. It was still dark when Garver was awakened by a splintering of headlights through the trees. He heard the car going down the driveway and listened it into silence. When he heard it coming back, he was sitting in the Morris chair drinking his third cup of coffee and reading the Times online. In this respect, at least, he'd changed his life. He'd be on fucking Facebook if he didn't watch himself. Advil had nuked his headache. The studio was still warm from the night before, and apparently he'd done himself the kindness of bringing in more wood. All a body needed for a good work day. Except good work. He looked out the window and saw the Honda pull up behind his truck. Lois got out, leaving the little girl in the car seat, and he went to the door. Our young man get off okay? I don't even know what to say to you, she said. That you would help him fuck up again. Yeah, I hope he wasn't the worse for wear this morning. One thing kind of led to another. No, you wanted him to fuck up. I see what you're doing. Claire and I are going to my sister's today. As soon as he's back, we're moving out of here. Hey, Lois, seriously. I liked you, she said, and he thought you were his friend. I hate to say it, but he's going to find other friends. You can't just, you know, go someplace else. What, are you going to sue us? I'm not letting him end up like you. Ouch, he said. Yeah, what can I say? Life is long. Well, shit. I like both of you, whatever that's worth. He lifted his chin toward the Honda. You better go to her. The little girl was thrashing in her seat. Garver couldn't make out what she was yelling. Lois opened the car door and knelt next to her in the frosty leaves, smoothed the hair off her forehead, said whatever a real parent would say to a weeping, unreachable child. The day before they came back to move their stuff out, Garver drove to Albany and got on a plane to Texas. His daughter had been after him to visit since his birthday, and if there were ever a time. At this point, what was another $1,000? He'd been making minimum payments for years. When he passed through the gate at Dallas-Fort Worth carrying his suitcase, the only one he'd noticed that didn't have those wheels, he spotted Emma in the crowd, wearing an oversized T-shirt that bulged out below her breasts, though her thighs were skinny in her leggings. She took a picture with her cell phone, then moved in to hug him. He felt that belly touch him. "So good to see you," he said. "Hey, I know you're not supposed to ask, but..." She looked down at herself. "Well, what in the world? Not again. You didn't tell me this. I'm happy for you." "Are you now?" she said. "I seem to remember." "Yeah, okay, not my finest moment." "You weren't exactly thrilled when Kayla was born either." "Okay, well, that was about the time your mother and I..." She held up a hand. "Let's not. Look, it's good to see you, too. So we're like half an hour, 45? You're not going to need that jacket. It's 85 degrees out there." It was the first time he'd been a passenger with her, as far as he could recall, since he'd taught her to drive on country roads near their house. In the freeway traffic, she stuck to her lane as tractor trailers passed on both sides, and her eyes kept darting from rearview mirror to left side mirror to right side mirror and back to the road. Out his window, all he saw was box stores and office buildings and apartment complexes. "I know, right?" she said. "Pretty flat. You get used to it." "Tell me something," he said. "Was I a monster?" "To be honest, you kind of were. I guess not so much to me. I hear from William on Facebook. Marianne, not so much. Mom, of course." "Ah, are you all friends?" "You're still kind of a dick," she said. "So I'm told," he said. "Jesus, I don't want to be." "But you're going to be nice with Jason and the kids, right?" "I had planned on it," he said. "Watch this guy." "I see him." She put on her turn signal, checked the mirrors, and edged into the exit lane. "We've almost made it home alive." The house was on a street called Skylark Drive, a brick rambler with a two-car garage, a chemical green lawn, and a tall oak tree in front. "This is right nice," he said. "We like it," she said. "Let's give you the tour and get you settled. I have to pick up the kids at 5. She punched numbers on a keypad and opened the door. It was cool in the house. He set his suitcase down in the foyer. The living room had a fake zebra rug and a black leather sectional, whose longer side faced a white brick fireplace. On the far wall, it had to be there, right? The fucking Picasso Don Quixote. "What can I tell you?" she said. "Jason's had it since college." "Well, at least it's not..." He couldn't come up with what it wasn't. "You might as well bring that in here. We're putting you in Noah's room." "Oh, Christ, no, I'm perfectly fine with the couch." "He wanted to give it to you. He found your website and everything. I think he's secretly hoping you'll look at the drawings he's been doing." "Don't tell me he's inherited the family curse." Yeah, I'm not going to touch that, she said. It's this one. That's a bathroom next door. The boys' room had bare walls, a twin bed with a Dallas Cowboys quilt, a dresser, and a giant computer on the desk. It looked as austere as Garver's studio. Oh, crap, she said. He took everything down. I guess he's a little shy. Silence, exile, and cunning, Garver said. He's obviously got the gift. Do you want to rest up, she said? Or we can sit out back. There's iced tea. Or I think there's some vodka somebody left. We don't really drink. Iced tea will do me for now. He'd had too many bottles of Jack Daniels on the plane, but he should have thought to bring something in his suitcase. When she went to pick up the kids from soccer, from choir practice, God help us, she left him on the deck in the backyard, shaded by more tall oaks. So this was Texas. It was the middle of October, and he was sitting outside, sweating through his shirt. Denton, she'd told him, was a university town. They'd even banned fracking. The subtext being, she couldn't possibly picture him living in such a place, dying in such a place. She knew him as little as he knew her. He finished his iced tea, went inside to shower. In the boys' room, his grandson's room, he opened his suitcase, took out his denim shirt with the fake pearl snaps, and felt something in the pocket. A thumb drive? He must have tossed the shirt in the wash without checking. Probably ruined what was on there. He had no inclination to find out. He went into the kitchen and opened cabinets until he found a bottle of Absolute Citron. Only a quarter of it gone. By the time the family got home, his family, if you thought about it, he ought to be where he needed to be.
That was David Gates reading his story, Texas. This is his second story in The New Yorker. You can hear more New Yorker fiction read by the authors on NewYorker.com and on the New Yorker apps available from the App Store or from Google Play. On the New Yorker Fiction Podcast, we invite writers to choose stories from the magazine's archives to read and discuss. This month, David Sedaris reads Leopard by Wells Tower. You can subscribe to that and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app. Tell us what you thought of this podcast by rating and reviewing The Writer's Voice in Apple Podcasts on iTunes. Our theme music is by Jordan Batiste and Ross Michaels of North American Plastics. The Writer's Voice is produced by Jill Duboff of NewYorker.com. I'm Deborah Treisman. Thanks for listening.